chance to have a dream, to open and run a bakery. But they took a chance, took the sweets to the street. Now they all have places where I'd love to eat.
Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dick, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff and share it with the people in their community. How are you this week? So great to be back talking to you again. Today on the show, I have a really fun talk with a buddy of mine from right here in Victoria, Byron Fry. And Byron is the owner of Fry's Red Wheat Bakery over on Craigflower Road, just across the bridge on the Victoria West, bordering Esquimalt side of this little city where I live. And he is a really interesting fella. I think you're going to love this chat. And it's coming up in a minute or two. Before then, a couple things to talk about very quickly. Next week, over at bakersforbakers.org, March 21st, we're having another Baker Roundtable talk. This is the monthly Zoom chats that we have together. And this talk is about building out your own bakery without losing your mind. And it's just an opportunity for folks that have got a bakery already or are working on building out theirs to talk about the fun, I'm using fun in air quotes, of the build-out process and all the decisions that you have to make and the trade-offs that you have to make and the permits that you have to get and all of that stuff. And so we've got a couple of folks as part of the community that are right in the midst of planning and signing leases and all of that. We also have some folks that have opened in the last couple of years that have earned all those scars. And we're all going to get together and share war stories and give advice and give a shoulder to cry on, whatever is needed for the folks in the Bakers for Bakers community. So if you are part of Bakers for Bakers, try and make it on the 21st. It'd be great to see you. And if you're not, well, what are you waiting for? Head on over to Bakers for Bakers. That's the number four. .org, bakersforbakers.org. Sign up and check out all the content that's there. Meet the people, very nice people from all around the world. I've got a new baker just signed up last week from the Faroe Islands in the Baltic Sea, which is pretty cool. So come check it out. It's a lot of fun. bakersforbakers.org. What else? I must be of a certain age now where the spam that I'm getting is just a little bit different, just a little more highly tuned. I got an email today from the physio group that I went to for physio when my back was bugging me. It's still bugging me, but it's not their fault. They used to have a newsletter, then they stopped for a couple of years, but now I'm getting their newsletter again. And the first thing is, come join us for a talk in April, hosted by this fella. And who is this guy? The first thing in his little bio was that he is a longevity enthusiast. So I thought, oh my God, a longevity enthusiast. I think I am too. I'm enthusiastic about longevity. I'm sorry. That's just killing me. Actually it's not. It's making me want to live. So I am not going to the call, but I thought that's something for my next business card is I'm going to put longevity enthusiast on it. And you know, honestly, those two things, Bakers for Bakers and my own mortality, that's really what's top of mind this week. So we'll leave the announcements at that. Okay. So Byron Fry, this is going to be a really fun talk, I think. I went over to his bakery after I did my shift at the coffee shop. I came home, washed up, loaded up my recording gear, and headed across the bridge to Craigflower Road to Byron's bakery. I just want to set the scene a little bit. Craigflower Road in Victoria is this like really narrow, curvy little street, and you kind of come up the hill, and at the top of the hill, you look down, and there's a park on your right, and then this one block of little businesses with apartments up top, and it's a really old building, and it's on a curve. So as Byron's going to describe, nothing really lines up. And right there, two doors in on the street is Fry's Bakery. And he's got, you know, the tiny, tiny little shop with the beautiful old windows and the nice, you know, properly hand-painted signs and stuff on the windows. And his bakery is very small, and it's almost entirely taken up by a massive brick oven, wood-fired brick oven that he built. There's enough room in front for a bench and to load all the bread, and then boom, you're right there with the counter where the person at the front is selling, and bread all around and goods all around on racks. And there's about enough room inside for two people to come and get their bread and head out. So he's always got a line because there's always more than two people that want good bread. And it's got the wrought iron sign that sticks out with a pretzel on it and the whole thing. It's real, real old school. And I love it to bits. And Byron just got, after 10 years, just rebuilt the hearth on his oven and set up this wild, funky door, sort of counterweighted door, that so he can lift the door and load the bread and close it, but then just open up a mini door to see what's going on inside. And it's really cool. It's a very interesting setup made of steel and tempered glass and well engineered and looks really good. So before we got to talking, he gave me a tour of the new oven door, and we looked at the hearth, and I oohed and awed because I loved it. And Stefan, his baker, is there, and he's working on stuff over at the sheeter, which is, you know, about 3 feet from the oven. And then we go along the side of the oven out the back door, and at the back behind the oven is where his mixer is. And he's got an old hockey stick mixer, just an ancient thing that was old when he bought it, and it does the business, though. And then we went outside and upstairs, because the little apartment upstairs he's going to turn into an office. He's renting that. And so it was all cleaned out, and it's just this tiny little apartment. And so we were sitting there on two tall chairs in the middle of the sort of kitchen area of this apartment, each holding a mic, and just had a really good chat. And just to my left out the window, like right there, oh, that's the chimney that goes up and from the back of that brick oven of his. So we were just sitting around having a chat. And so you get those kind of sitting around having a chat noises that you don't get on Zoom. I think the call sounds pretty good. It's very organic, which is what Byron's Bakery is all about. So it fits the man, fits the place, fits the scene. And I really think you're going to enjoy this call. So here we go. A live chat sitting 3 feet apart from each other in real life, like human beings. I'm talking with Byron Fry from Fry's Red Wheat Bakery in Victoria, BC. Well, first of all, one of the things that I've always been curious about with you is the family history with baking. Because like on your door, it's, you know, since 1897 and Fry's Red Wheat. And I know there's a pretty good story in that. So before the Fry family, the Fry name in this area of the world, how did that happen?
Yeah. So it's kind of a mixed history I've gotten from various sources. So yeah. There's some of it that's probably myth and
sure.
Some of it that actually lines up, but essentially my grandfathers on both sides of my family were bakers. And then on my dad's side, it goes back, we figure about four or five generations.
Wow.
And it's kind of like a, you know, there wasn't just one person. It was like the brothers and sisters and uncles and cousins. And I think everyone worked in various ways. And
yeah.
And on my mom's side, I didn't know any of that side of that family that well. I'm on the Fry side, actually, but on my mom's side, my opa, so my grandfather is from Holland, and he was trained as a baker in Holland. And so I grew up more with my mom's experience talking about growing up in a bakery and what my opa did. And I saw him as a baker. He died when I was 16. So
okay.
Never really got to be in his bakeries. He was retired by the time, you know, I was old enough to get it to notice. And then by the time, you know, I was into it, he was, had passed on. But my Oma worked in bakeries with him, and she was alive for the opening of the bakery and told us lots of things.
Oh, cool.
And, I named the oven Wilhelmina after her, and she's passed now, but, yeah. So the Fry family side goes back, the oldest kind of artifact that we have says, actually, I think it says earlier than 1897, but, it's like I have a Fry's bread token.
Oh, wow.
For one loaf from like 1890 something from Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan.
Oh, that's so cool.
And, oh, wow. Some members of my family, possibly this fellow, Charles Fry, who I have a photograph of and whatnot, who would have been my great, great, great grandfather, I think, came over from, Bristol in England, and they started a, bakery in Moose Jaw.
Okay.
Which I don't know very much about.
Yeah.
And then in the '20s, they, I guess at some point through World War I, that bakery had shut down in Moose Jaw. And in the '20s, they opened up in Victoria.
Okay.
And they opened up at, I think it's 403 Craigflower Road. And we're currently sitting in 414 Craigflower Road.
No so way.
They opened kind of directly across the street. The bakery's at 416.
Yeah.
And looks directly across, across the road at where the bakery would have been.
That's
the so building's cool. No longer there.
Yeah.
I have an article from the '60s where they were tearing down the building, and they were like, you know, flabbergasted to discover this wood fired oven in it, you know, and the bakery had shut down maybe 20 years before, but
sure.
All that time of change, people had kind of modernized in so many ways. And so finding an old oven was a newsworthy event. And
yeah,
so
yeah.
We have the clipping from that. And so That would have run through a couple generations in my family. And then I think my grandfather, I never knew. He wasn't, he wasn't a figure in my life. And,
right.
And I think he was a bit of an ominous figure in my father's life. The one thing about as I've looked in the Fry family history, there's a lot of, colorful and sometimes unsavory characters going back.
Oh yeah.
There. But, as you know, as so many families are,
I think that's kind of the immigrant experience.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, yeah.
You know, other sides of the family are much more, maybe upstanding, but, there was some rebellious natures for sure. And, yeah, so that family, that part of my family had this, bakery across the street. And so when I started baking, I didn't actually know much of this. I knew my opa was a baker, and my dad one day, as we were starting to get ready to bake for farmers markets, kind of unearthed this old piece of paper that he had. That he's like, yeah, I think someone in our family was a baker, and it was the logo that we use now.
Yes.
And so yeah. The Fry's rib wheat bread, made since 1897. I have seen some other. I think we have a photocopy of it downstairs, but it's a full pamphlet that I guess they tried to kind of market the bread
sure.
as a recipe that they would sell to other bakers
okay.
in town
yeah.
and I think further afield, you know, and they apparently milled their own flour, and they were actually advocating red fife wheat
yeah.
in like the '20s or thirties, going, you know, Fry's red wheat bread. It's a household name in Victoria. You know, if you, you know, market your bakery, want to bake my bread, well, I'll sell you the flour and teach you how to do it kind of thing.
Sure. Sure.
Bit of a presumptuous way of doing it. But I guess that was, that was a avenue of success for them at some point. And there's lots of old photos of them parades around Victoria.
Yeah.
You know, the direct lineage, I always get confused with exactly
sure.
where it came in, yeah. but there's definitely a long history, and it's sort of odd to, you know, when I was looking for a bakery, when this place came for lease, and I knew the history, but I knew only a bit of it, you
right.
know, I was like, oh, this is right across. This, if I'm going to do it in the building, you know, I figured I could put a wood fired oven in it because, as we're sitting now, you can kind of, we're on this weird in the upstairs suite above it. And there's a weird little space that the chimney comes up.
That's right.
Right next to you.
Out the window here.
And, that was what I was like, okay, I can do it here. It's a cool older building. I kind of like it. It's, you know, this neighborhood was like a lot rougher back then. There was bars in the windows when I took the place over. It was a bike shop. And, you know, it had been various things over the years. Apparently, maybe the space had actually even been another bakery in my family as well. You know, when I first got it, I could see faint wisps on the windows of bread, or, you know, written like old letters that someone had written, and the ghosting was still there. And so bread and sandwiches, but it'd also been a Thai place and all of these different things over time, right? You know, it's a, I think that if there was a bakery in here, it would have been the 50s or early 60s. And then there was definitely a bakery next door. And this goes into this whole thing of like, you know, just things echoing through time when you get into it. It's kind of spooky, you know. It's like the bakery next door was Martin Barnett's. He ran Rising Star, originally in what is now Spiral Cafe.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, that's so neat.
And so this place, you know, it was like, because Martin was such a wild hippie back in those days. I don't know if you've ever seen any photos, but there's this great photo of him in this old moving van called Astral Moves. And it was him and his buddy, the psychedelic van. And they drove around Victoria, you know, moving things. And they opened this like psychedelic, you know, hippie, maybe a Jewish bakery, I think, his background. Yeah. And apparently there used to be a bus out back, and someone would, like, you know, right where we're looking now, someone lived in that bus, and they come in. And I think actually one of the folks who ended up starting Spiral used to actually work at that bakery back in the day.
Cool.
And you know, the other connection to the spot is, the fellow who used to run Royal Bay Bakery. I can't remember his name.
Oh, I don't know.
Anyways, Scania Bakery, another baker, lived up here when Rising Star was here.
Okay.
And he told me once that every morning you'd hear the mixer turn on.
Yeah.
And, you know, go on for a few minutes. And then as soon as the mixer was stopped, you'd just smell marijuana. Someone would just mix the dough, spark up a joint. And
there you go. Oh, man.
So.
That's so cool. Well, yeah. Well, and so when did your... When did you build the oven here? Like how long are about 12 years now?
So we just celebrated our 10 year anniversary last September.
Yeah.
And so it was like, I guess we're coming up. March will have been exactly 11 years from when I got the lease.
Okay.
Or end of March, I mean.
Because that, I was just thinking time-wise, that was probably like the last chance you had to find a building that you could put a brick oven in. Like everything's changed in this city so much now that I don't know, like, how many places you can still do it, you know?
I think you could still get away with it in a few spots. You just gotta know how to be pigheaded.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not take no for an answer.
Well, that was, you gave me that advice when I was out visiting you years back when I was still at the had Orange Boot and we were at the farmer's markets in town, and you're like, well, if you don't get your way, just join the board. There you go. Yeah. But it didn't come to that for me, but it was just sort of like, well, what, do you want to do this? It's like,
it came down to certain things. Is just to, you know, if someone, like there, when we were starting markets, we were getting stonewalled a lot by other people not wanting competition. And, and it, luckily we got in to Moss Street in the end for years. And that was so good for us, but our initial time applied, we were turned down.
Okay.
And there was a couple other bakers in there that just didn't want, they were like, oh, there's enough bakers. And it was like, well, I don't think it really belongs to anyone, you know? And people came in over the years while I sold there. And actually I got on the review committee and I worked with the market manager and that to just open it wide up. And if you were a certain quality, you're in.
Yeah.
And then in the end, when we stopped going during COVID, that's when I reached out to Josh, who I hadn't met yet, but I knew he was buying flour from us at Nicker Rose, and he's been killing it at Moss Street.
Oh yeah.
It's pretty much his whole show, which is perfect for someone like him. And, you know, I was very happy to find someone who was using good things there, because that market really needs, any market really needs a good bread.
A very good bakery.
Some people will get in your way and go, no, you're not welcome in.
Yeah.
You know, this, and they're making mediocre product and trying to hold the spot. And it's just you know.
And you can have 15 produce vendors and they all have their own strengths. It's like, why not with bakers too, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's actually one of the things, you know, when you first contacted me last summer, I was just in a completely different headspace. And I was like, no, I don't want to talk. And I, you know, I had someone, I had someone else ask me to be on something as well. And I was like, oh, I was in a different zone. But as I've been thinking about it, one of the things I wanted to talk about is actually how we're so far from having enough bakeries in this town or anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, we're not even close. You know, there's what, you know, 300,000 people in Victoria, and a single baker can barely take care of 1,000 people.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you could have 200 or 300 bakeries in a city this size and,
yeah.
and, you know, take that algorithm and use it throughout the world, because so much is going through getting sold at the grocery stores
yeah.
and by grocery stores from frozen product. That's just, it's not, no one's making it.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. And it's like the convenience factor of buying it at the grocery store. It's like, well, you can replace that, but with the convenience factor of it's in your neighborhood. And so now you have quality and convenience, right? Where it's like, you know, coming across town or, you know, or whatever, it's like, maybe that's going to turn some people off. So get out where the people are. Right.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But no, you're exactly right. I think and especially these days, but it's like, it's not like you're getting any deals at the grocery store either. So it's like, you might as well be buying from the guy that's actually making it, you know?
Yeah. And when I opened up, I remember doing a calculation that we were doing these, you know, 2 kilo loaves at $10, mm-hmm. which was, you know, that's what was seen as expensive back then.
Yeah.
Now that would be probably cheap.
Yeah.
You know, you go to the grocery store and you could buy 4 or 5 loaves of bread to get something that equaled the same weight,
yeah.
you know, to get something that was like, you know, 1.5 kilos after it baked or something like that.
Yeah.
And each of those loaves was still $2. And so it ends up, that shit's more expensive than what we're making.
Yeah.
They're just pumping more air into it. And you're, you know, if you think of cost as a loaf of bread, and okay, what's the definition of a loaf of bread?
It's
250 grams. You know, after it's done baking, a loaf of bread, like if it's a foot long, like no, it's not. It's a quarter of a loaf of bread, you know, depending on you know, which bakery you go to. And, you know, I've always dealt with baking bigger loaves just because I think they suit the wood-fired oven more.
Right.
And I think also that I like people to have a loaf of bread on the counter and live with it, not necessarily eat it all in a day and come back tomorrow, which may be more lucrative, but it's a different experience, you know?
Right. Yeah. No, absolutely. Well, and you, do I remember right? Like you, where was your first oven? Cause you were baking sort of in the driveway. Why do I remember that? Yeah, is that?
It was not quite in the driveway. My parents have a farm out in Machosin, but so they got 10 acres up on the top of a hill at the beginning of Souk Hills out there.
And, nice.
Yeah, it's a pretty little spot, and I wasn't sure. You know, I was just getting into baking, and I met actually Richard Miskovich, and actually I listened to your interview with him, and it's actually what convinced me. I was like, ah, oh, fuck, I gotta talk to this guy. I love Richard so much. He's the, you know, 95% of the reason I'm here doing this. The person who was able to make me see that it was possible.
Yeah.
You know. We all have someone like that you meet totally. Who just like click. Totally. You're like, oh yeah, I can fucking do this. And he was like, yeah, you can fucking do this. <You know? laughs> And he steered me onto these mobile ovens that this fellow William Davenport was building for. It was called Turtle Rock Heat out of Vermont.
Okay.
He sold me a set of plans.
Okay.
And we built this oven up on my parents' property on a trailer, and I had some wacky ideas about baking at the farmer's market, which is, right. I think everyone who's ever tried realizes is a terrible idea.
Yeah.
I could let alone stand upright at the farmer's market, but being able to bake bread at the same time is a little, I just heard of someone else trying to, and they're getting out of it already.
Yeah.
But so I ended up parking the trailer up at my folks' place, and baking out of the downstairs of their house, for a year and a half or so. And
okay.
That was back in 2010 I built the oven. So I baked out for 2 market seasons out of there, essentially.
Yeah.
And that oven's still around. It's on a friend, and actually former employee. He took it and he put it on a fire truck, and he started building a pizza truck out of it. And it's a midway. It's one of those projects that, you know, is maybe it'll get finished one day, but, he's busy with other things now. And, we've used it the other day, last year we used it to
to cook a dinner for a dear friend of mine. It was really lovely. It was fun to play with it. You know, it's been around
for sure
for now. Yeah. You know, 10, 11 years, or longer. The first oven was definitely a learning experience. And then we built the second one. I was bouncing off a lot of different ideas when I did it, and I didn't have any money. You know, it's like you talked about some of these places and they spend $1 million on a build out or 750 or easily $200,000 or $300,000, you know, the only other bakery I'd heard of that had opened for, the cheapest bakery I'd heard of, I mean, it was $200,000 or $300,000,
I think.
And we had $35,000 when we rented downstairs.
Yeah.
That was actually $30,000 that was lent to me by my business partner's mother and my the son of my mom, Ottilie, who or the son of my mom. That is the mother of my son, Ottilie, who I run the business with still. Her mother lent us $30,000 to open the bakery.
Wow.
And we had already had some investment in equipment that my parents had helped me with. And we started building out just with probably not nearly enough money. You know, I think we probably spent $60,000 by the time we were done, but we made most of that while we were working alongside, you know, doing the whole thing.
Yeah.
And you know, I was just telling you, got a mixer for $400, you know, that we're still using, all used fridges. We only had, you know, one or two fridges at the time.
Yeah.
Used tables. I scrounged everything I could scrounge, and most of that money went into the oven and the plumbing.
Yeah,
and,
totally.
You know, the architect who did it in the end, she didn't even ask to be paid. She was so kind and tried to trade with her, and she was like, don't worry about it. And, you know, there was the city was stonewalling us the whole time, of course, and trying to get more money out of us as they love to do. And actually the former mayor was a counselor then, and she was quite helpful in getting the city kind of bureaucrats to push us through, because it was months of paying rent that we didn't have, you know?
Well, then that's the thing, right? Like, you tie it all up and you're still paying.
Yeah.
You're still paying, and they won't, and you can't make any money.
Yeah.
For sure.
And so we pushed, and I opened before I had a business license. I fired the oven before, you know, did everything you're not supposed to do.
Yeah.
Other than, I did actually pull permits for, sometimes I regret that. But, you know, as it goes, it was an interesting experience, you know, and then opening up, but I was a baby, you know, I was 24 years old. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I'm realized this is the year I realized that I'm like, oh, this is the year I should open a bakery. I should have waited a decade or.
Yeah, so, totally. Like,
I wasn't ready back then, but
well, did it anyways. The beard throws me off, because I didn't know you were that young. My God. Yeah.
Just turned 35.
Oh, Jesus. That's hilarious.
Would have been a more normal time to start a business.
Oh,
you know?
My God. Yeah.
But,
yeah. Well, but that's the thing, right? But it was, my assumption is it was well received right away, kind of thing. Like, there were,
the farmer's market really helped us.
Yeah.
You know, we had, I think that there's a nod in the city to the whole history of people who've been bakers here, you know, and there's been a lot of bakeries, and, you know, we were just at that baker's meetup.
Right.
And I was talking to Tom from Crust Bakery. Yep. You know, that spot's been a bakery since my grandfather had a bakery on the same street.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, my opa had a bakery down there. And I remember that when it was the Rhineland Bakery growing up, and then the Renaissance Bakery, and then, you know, it was actually offered to me at some point. I was like, no. And then when he got in there, he's done banging in there, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's this long history of people keeping those places going and keeping that quality up in this town. So I think people were hungry for something. And I think, you know, a big nod to Erica and Cliff, who have Wildfire and Full of Pea, and they started doing the wood-fired bread thing in Victoria, you know, before most people were doing it in North America.
Right on.
You know, very early days.
And
so they had actually sold at Moss Street. And so there was this kind of great spot for us to start selling there. And people always, oh, there's good bread here.
Yeah.
Because there had been for so long.
Yeah.
And that we just kind of fit in a nice little window, and it helped us really well. And I think that's what Josh has been able to carry on the success of that space. And
it's sort of, I don't know, like, it's not, expected is the wrong word, but it just seems normal here that there be at least a few places that you can get good bread at. Because like when you're dead on, like before I built my oven in Saskatchewan,
yeah,
would come out here visiting and stuff, and just to see places, like all of my inspiration all came out of the coast.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think it's just that it didn't quite die here.
Yeah.
Like I think it's not that it didn't exist in the prairies. My, you know, my grandparents had a wood fired bakery in the prairies, you know, like you weren't the first, but you were one of the first to restart and re-spark it. And I think in Victoria, we didn't quite lose all the bakeries. And I think that's the bigger conversation of us as bakers, is that we almost lost our trade, you know? Yeah. And I'm working with a fellow out in Isuk who's been kind of so kind to teach me working on how to work on wooden boats, because I bought a wooden boat, and so sort of a recreational ship right now.
Yeah.
And it's another trade that's dying. You know, working on wooden ships is passing away in a lot of places, and it feels kind of like how baking did, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. Is what they're feeling now, and I truly hope that they have the same success that bakeries have had, you know, because bakers, there, you know, I think 20 years ago, there wasn't a lot of people making, you know, good artisan goods almost anywhere in North America.
Yeah.
Or 30 years ago.
Sure.
And it had been killed by the grocery stores. They came in and they cost cut all the bakeries until they put them out of business. They hired all the bakers that, you know, were no longer able to work in those bakeries, and they, you know, there was probably good bread for a while in a lot of grocery stores. And I heard that, you know, my Opa worked in a Safeway for a while and they had a lot of that quality stuff, but then they didn't invest in retraining.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and there was a fellow that I talked to just a few months ago. He's in Ontario and he worked 20 some years for Loblaws before he opened up his own place, right, in the bakery. And he said, yeah, it totally changed. Like it's when he started there, they were making real product.
Yeah.
And then it was just sort of like, well, it's just easier. You know, I don't have to train so much. People don't have to apprentice to where he realized I'm not doing anything that I want to do.
You know? And I think that's one of, you know, for one thing, it's pretty rough that they shut down all the bakeries in the first place, but it's like a double kick in the nuts when they just almost threw away all the trade, you know, strength.
Yeah.
And it's quite, that's why the meetings that we're at are so important, because it gets people together and going, no, we're like, we're a group of people who need to carry this on.
Well, and that, what was so impressive for me was just how many people were there. Yeah. Like that was just nuts.
Yeah.
And to think, you know, and we could probably all come up with five or six that weren't able to make it,
which is
pretty impressive, you know, but that's the thing. I think like, that's what Martin and the association can do more of, is because you're in your own place and you're working and it's hard work and you're tired and stuff. And you never go see your neighbors unless someone organizes an event, and then we'll go see the neighbors. Right.
Yeah.
And
Actually Tom was saying, he called me after the event and was saying that we need to all kind of get together on a more informal basis,
so,
you know, more regularly, and just, you know, maybe without all the reps there, you know, talking about going golfing and getting drunk. And it was just, you know, like, let's just all hang out as bakers and, you know, have a beer sometime. So maybe that'll happen.
And that's the thing. It's an interesting assortment of folks that come to those, because it really is across all manners of food, right? Yeah.
And I think like the spot at Camosa, it was cool to be at Camosa, and like one of my, younger, like my youngest sort of apprentice right now just came out of there, and it was cool to see where he'd been going to school. He's a good kid and really happy with, you know, the foundation he has. And, and it sounds like that they're trying to make some changes so that we can get some more longer term kind of, co-ops or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And kind of focus more on the baking trade.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was so neat to see Stefan downstairs.
Yeah.
Right? You know, and I guess that's been part of the story for you folks, for you through here, is like people have been kind of coming through and doing the rounds. Like I remember seeing you years ago and you had a pastry guy running pizzas on Sundays and thing, right?
You know, like that's run for a while. We have Derek who he's been with us for 8 years and he's been making pizzas, for us for almost that entire time. And, we have, Stefan's been with me for a few years now, and he started out of, or I met him originally, out in Quebec.
Right.
And, Marc-André introduced us, and then he found his way out here, and he actually, we didn't have a spot for him for a while, and he kind of was living in Victoria for maybe even a couple of years before we got to bring him on, or at least a year. And he's a killer part of the team. It was for us, it was really hard during, you know, like everyone during COVID, there wasn't a lot of movement of people. You didn't get a lot of new people. And then a lot of people didn't want to work or, so our like core staff were really good during that time. There was definitely some people we had to hire at the time who just weren't food people, you know, and it took a bit to, and I think there was so much going on that I don't mind hiring someone who's not a food person, but you got to have time to sort of indoctrinate them. and get them on, you know, and that was a bit of a challenge. So we're sort of rebuilding a team to a certain degree since COVID. We still have a lot of core members, but, I think for me, I really enjoy bringing people in who, and giving them the space to kind of use their skills and not just like follow my program, but to add to it, because there's only so much I can come up with or keep going. And, you know, personally for me, I have a hard time just keeping myself occupied on like wanting to do the same thing every day, you know, which is like, that's one of the issues with being a baker, is that you have all this energy and you start a place and you build this whole bakery idea, but then you just have to repeat the same thing.
Right. Yeah.
Indefinitely.
Yeah.
And that's where I want to be like messing with everything all the time, changing this, turning it upside down. And I really rely on my staff to bring the consistency that I can't bring because I just don't have that in my brain.
That's right. Yeah. Well, and if you play with things, and if that's the process is all you're going to play and tweak and play and tweak, then only you can do it. And you can't step away, right? And it's so hard to find that balance.
Exactly.
I'm getting it on a very small scale at the coffee shop, right?
Where
finding the balance with the owners and the one owner that really is into baking and that. And it's like, well, here's how I can help, but you create what you know, I can do this consistently and you tweak this and we'll work out fine. You know, like that kind of a thing. And it's a dance. It's a dance when you start building the team out. You know, it's a different, I guess, a different mindset, different hat a little bit.
Yeah, it's something. The leadership thing is something because I was so young when I started, I didn't have so many skills, let alone was like just regular, you know, baking skills, let alone leadership skills. And leadership is something I've been taking really seriously lately and trying to understand. I was recommended this book, Leaders Eat Last. Simon Sinek.
Yeah.
Really great. And that was very helpful for me in remembering some of those kind of key tenets of how to reach people, especially younger people. That book has a lot about reaching the younger generation.
Yeah.
For some reason, you know, I feel I'm talking about the younger generation, but it feels like a long ways between people who are 25 and where I'm at 35 right now.
Well, yeah, but it's a life experience thing, really. You know, it's like 10 years in the shop.
Yeah.
No matter like that, that's, yeah. It doesn't matter what numeric age you are now.
Yes.
You're 10 years further down the road.
Well, and it's so funny because you can have some people you hire and you train and they just don't get it. And you feel like, what am I doing wrong? I'm like trying everything. I'm trying to be as nice as possible. And they're just obliterating it. And they're just, you know, or they just think I'm a total asshole. And I really don't think I am all the time. I know sometimes, but, and then you hire someone, you get someone else and they just get it. They just like, oh, okay. Yeah. You give them this thing and they just get it and they move through it and take some, you know, still, there's still challenges, still learning, but you really see them find their confidence in it. And, you know, I've had people who have gotten their permanent residency through working with me and seen them come from people who have never been in a kitchen before to now being like, I got this one lady who came from Czech, and when she started for me, she'd never been in the kitchen. And now the respect that she gets, you know, I was just talking to one of the the sous chef out at Wild Mountain, Scotty. And he'd been, him and I were working on boat stuff together, and we had some big snack plate laid out, and we had some crostini, and he was eating these crostini. He's like, "These are really good, but I make these all the time. What are this?" I'm like, "Oh, Petra made them." And he had worked with her out there. And this guy's been, you know, in kitchens all over Canada and really talented guy. And he's like, "Oh, everything Petra makes is good." You know, and it was so great to watch someone come in here and just find their skill set and blossom and just, you know, she's just about to have a baby. And so it's so great to see someone's like become so confident and go through so many life changes while working with you and really become a different person than you really thought or that you could see when you first met them,
Totally. I get it for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's it sounds like I've listened to a couple of your podcasts where you've interviewed former staff.
Yeah.
And, you've had like, you know, very positive experiences with some
similar kind of thing. Yeah. And also rocky moments in the moment.
Yeah.
Right. You know, where, you know, it's like, I don't talk with folks about it that much, but it's like, I think we all have our arsehole moments that you regret later. And it's, I've just always been felt good with my staff or our staff that, you know, after the fact, it's like we're still friends.
Yeah.
We're still checking in on each other and they look back fondly at the experience, even when I wasn't always at my best.
It's funny because I have people who have been with me through so much and will still come back from time to time.
Yep.
You know, a lady lives up in Tofino will come down and cover shifts just because she wants to hang out.
Yeah.
And she'll stay at the house or whatnot. Or she drove down from Tofino just for our 10-year party and drove back that night.
Just to hang out.
You know, but then you have some people you meet and they'll say hi and like, you don't even remember them. Yeah. You know, it's like, you worked for me.
I must have been very tired.
Oh, it's just, you know, we all go through your life things. Right.
And that's happened. The thing. I think when you're doing your own thing and you're running your own business and it's the type of business like we have, it's like, I don't know. You're not always at your best. You strive for it, but it's like you got to give yourself a bit of grace too.
Yeah, and
it's
funny, you know, too. I find sometimes it's really like I'm a lot more careful about how quickly I open up to people now.
Sure,
I bring them in and I try and be very kind to them and
sure,
do what I can to welcome them in the space. But it's, you know, even just in general, being someone from growing up in Metchosin from the island, so many people moving here and doing this, I have this in the rest of my life. It's kind of like, oh, I'll give you some time. See how long you stick around before I really start. Because it's just, you know, at some point it's not a lot, but we had 15 people here working with us when we were doing the markets. And it's just, if that's changing over semi-regularly,
it's a lot of people. It's a lot of people. You know? Oh, yeah.
You got to be worried about everyone's mental health and you're tucking in, you're trying to be nice, trying to do this, trying to do that. Yeah. And it's just like, and this person doesn't like this person. And you know, it's like, fuck. Yeah. This person barely, you know, this person, I know you two like each other, but you both speak slightly different. You know, your language is, you know, maybe not both English isn't your first language and you're just not understanding each other and you're at each other's throats for a second. Jesus.
<You know? laughs> Yeah.
No, everyone, it's okay. We're just bacon bread.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you're like, why? How did this happen? I so enjoy actually baking.
Yeah.
And now I'm a coach to so many folks, but that's part of the fun. Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's something I haven't taken seriously in the past, or really I've rejected the need to be boss and wanted to maybe be more friend or you know, just like trying to put people at ease when they're in the space. Yep. And I think that's a good thing, but I've also been trying to just kind of set that boundary of like, no, I'm here to to lead you and this is how you treat me and this is how you treat the people around you.
And I will also say, here's where we're headed. Yeah. You know, this is what I'm thinking that you're, you know, I was thinking about that this morning. Like we had a moment at Orange Boot where it was always like, if you were working there and it's the end of your shift and you want to take some stuff home, just take it, you know? And then finally, some of the crew came to me and said, look, let's set a staff rate. Because sometimes I actually want to buy like a box of whatever, you know, and you're being very kind, but it makes me nervous. I would much rather, and I said, okay, well, here this is staff rate on stuff that's, that's fresh today.
Yeah.
And now everybody's happy. And it's like, oh, okay. I'm thinking I'm going to be the nice, like I'm trying to be the nice guy here. It's, ah, you know, it's your place to help yourself, you know? And they're like, no, just give me some, give me a boundary. Give me some sort of structure.
We do that as well. It's like, if you want to eat something, just don't make it not the last of everything. And if you want to buy something, there's a discount in the box. But at the end of the day, take what you take.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And, but it's
a hard line for some people.
What we found was that it was like, if you said here, if you know, and I wrote up an email at one point where every new hire, I got the email like, here's how things work here, right?
Yeah.
And people were like, oh my God, this is so helpful. This just to say it out loud, you know.
and this is one of the reasons that I realized I had to talk to you, as I was listening to some of the podcasts, and you did that one where it's just you talking about some things. Yeah. You guys, you know, your bakery systems one. I was like, fuck yeah, like some of these, they're so fucking obvious. That you know, it's like, oh yeah, an email about this is how things work here. Yeah. Great idea. Yeah. We should have one of those. Yeah. Instead of just sort of, you know, the coconut wireless of one former employee telling the other one. And you know, it's just.
In all fairness, every time we hired someone, it took me ages to find it. You know, it's like, where is that email? And, you know, but it's like, at least I could find it. Yeah. 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 But it's smart. True. But you don't think about it until you do. And then it seems obvious and you're like, And I guess maybe that's the thing, is we cannot beat ourselves up when we finally come up with a thing that we didn't do it 10 years ago or 5 years ago. Cause things that we were busy.
Yeah.
It's like, we'll get there. You know, we'll get everywhere eventually. Yeah.
No, I think you said something in one of that podcast of just stop solving the same problem again and again. And I was like,
yeah,
I think that's my life. that's why I feel like I'm going around in circles. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's an interesting space, and just, you know, understanding, starting to understand, you know, when you're leading people, understanding your role as being that person on the outside who's there to observe, who's there to make everyone better.
Yeah.
And I think one of the lines from that book that really stuck out for me is that, you know, the definition of power is actually the transfer of energy.
Yes.
And that to have power over people isn't to like, you do this, you do that, but no, to like imbue them with your energy and inspire them to be, you know, and I think there's a Thomas Keller quote of just the idea that everyone in his kitchen who's working with him has the ability to be better than him.
Yes.
And that's the goal. You want people to go out who have worked with you and succeed in the world.
Yeah.
And show very well for their time with you and all the things that they learn.
Yeah. And everyone that comes in is excited about something. Yeah. And sometimes you got to dig a little bit to find it or find what's that thing. But you know, no, like nobody came into work at our place because, oh God, I got to do something. It may as well be this. It was cause it's such an oddball career for most people, you know, like the ones that want to do this stuff, it could be a misguided dream that they get the shock, but it's like, at least they're coming in excited for something. You know.
Well, I think too, you know, in society, we don't have a lot of meaningful work left.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people make a lot of money doing bullshit.
Yep.
You know, and I think they figured that out through COVID when they're like, oh, you're not, you know, when the initial conversation of who's essential and who isn't. But I think for, you know, we stayed open because we're like, screw this, bread's essential. Like, yeah, I want to bake totally. For these people. You know, we put out a table of free bread every week for, you know, like 6 months, maybe, I don't know, maybe longer, just because it's like, no, like these people need food right now.
Yeah.
It's an important thing. And this is the thing, you know, especially if you weren't able to be making money or whatnot. And, I think, you know, for a lot of folks who, you know, their jobs weren't as directly, you know, you don't have that direct feedback. It's got to be very isolating. And I feel for people who don't have meaningful work in their lives, and as much money as you have doesn't fill that, you know, and as we get in a world where people don't think that they have to work for economic reasons, there's still a lot of physical reasons within your body that you have to be doing something.
Oh, like, yeah.
And, you know, I think as we see the rise of exercise, as much as exercise is a great thing, but we see exercise culture becoming so dominant. It's like, because people used to work.
Yeah.
Like, and biologically, we are built to work in some way. Like, everyone had to do something for a long time. And suddenly, just because, you know, to get the food and put it in your mouth, you don't really have to do anything, doesn't mean like your entire being isn't built around doing shit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I don't know, maybe that's just me, but I just see a lot of people, you know, the work for home crowd there. I'm sure that wasn't easy, you know, in its own ways.
I can speak from first-hand experience for that. When I moved out here, I was mentioning to someone, like when I moved out here, I was really happy because I had moved all of my work online. I was coaching, I was running communities, that kind of thing. And so I could move and not immediately have to find a job here or something, right? And then when COVID hit and you couldn't, you know, you just weren't allowed to, I thought, well, I'm really lucky. I have contracts, I'm doing stuff, it's good. And then when it opened up, I realized I must get out of the apartment now, or I am going I'm going to cause myself harm.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, like, and so, yeah, so I had 3 years, that was kind of my limit was like, now I must do something out amongst people or I'm going to lose my mind. Right. And
And having work that has feedback, we had a lovely fellow working for us and his wife had a really great job working for the university, you know, studying some really obscure period of like literature in this one, you know, one's part of Europe for this, like within 5 years of like the 1600s.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like so obscure. And she's so, you know, super smart lady, so good at it. But then he would come work for me and they had a kid in the share time, but he was would work at the bakery and but also be doing as much of the childcare because her job was, you know, full on and a lot of teaching and whatnot. And but it was so interesting to think like, wow, the economy rewards such a specific thing so much more than something that appeals to everyone. You know, this fellow was known so well in the neighborhood and, you know, everyone knew that this guy, he lived here and he worked at the bakery and and just like everyone who works for me has a very strong role. You know, I've been encouraging staff to take.
People see you on the street and they say hi and
And yet it's valued so little financially. When it comes down to it, it's not, we're not, you know, raking in the cash doing it, but it's real work, you know, and then so much of this work has become, you know, quasi existential.
Cindy works on me a lot with that. Like you have to break the connection between how much you're paid and the value you give, or else we're all done. You know, she works in schools as a teaching assistant, right?
Yeah.
So she's in the same boat.
Yeah, she way more.
She's changing these little kids' lives, literally. Yeah. And yet
not nearly getting as much as the person who's sitting in the office.
The school district at one point wanted to pay these folks less during recess supervision because they weren't working one-on-one with kids anymore. Yeah, like that kind of stuff. And it's like, so I was like, well, the school board guys can't be getting paid when they go to the bathroom anymore. Come on. Like, what are you doing?
And like, this is the thing. Anyways, like,
We
have all this issues with, you know, getting deliveries right now isn't always the easiest with their driver shortages and this and that. Mm-hmm. And it's like, where, like how many people are in the office, you know, or how many reps, you know, as much as no disrespect to the reps, but like, the people who are doing the grinding work are often getting paid the least and they put the less emphasis on them, you wonder, we see it in all the organizations with, you know, the right here in BC, the Ferries Corporation struggling to have enough, you know, crew, but I'm sure there's enough people in the office.
Right. I gotcha. Yeah.
Anywho.
Hey, I wanted to ask you about, Nucaro's and the mill and that, like, because you were or are sort of part of that.
I'm like effectively I belong to the mill in a sense in that I have to take care of it.
Yeah,
and I have to. I'm the person who gets called if it breaks.
Okay,
but on paperwork, as far as the government cares, Erica from Wildfire runs it all now. We started it together, and it just paperwork wise, it made a lot easier for one of us, and we both just kind of I think we both have errant lives that sometimes take over from time to time. It was just easier to kind of,
but so what's the why, like why did you get into that? What's sort of the goal?
Big goal. Eric and I got into it because we were both milling flour in the bakery, and it kind of sucks to mill flour right in your bakery.
Yeah,
you know, it's just, it's dusty, you don't get good grain storage, it it worked when we started, when we were slow.
And you both have very small places.
Yeah,
right?
Small places. Yeah. She's actually not as small as you think. She's got a sweet basement and, and an upstairs pastry kitchen.
It's pretty cool. Interesting. Okay.
But yeah, still. Every bakery is small eventually.
No matter how what size it is, and now I want to put a mill in.
Or every time, or another fridge, or there's always like another fridge. We just bought a new fridge or new fridges entirely for the bakery this year, and a new mixer and all the new work on the oven that we just did, and you know, we just invested in this year more on the bakery than we did when we opened.
Right.
Anyway, all of those things, it eventually just shrinks, you know, you get a little bit more space, you put up another shelf, you know, oh, I can bring more of this in, right?
Yeah.
Here, I can have 8 boxes of walnuts if I feel like it.
Yeah.
As it goes, you know?
Yeah.
But no, Nook & Rose is, it was good to just get a little spot, out of the city. It's really close to where I live.
Yep.
You know, there's things maybe like we have a little store out there. It's a challenge running, you know, a store in a rural place like that, and how busy it's going to be or not be. And, and just also when I was at the bakery in here and then when I was more involved in running it, and I think Erica is much better. She's got a spot out in Shirley, and she goes back and forth a lot, and she's always ran the store and had more of a, interest and skill set in that. I was just really interested in the flour.
Right.
And
sure.
We did a store because we kind of had to out there and
to make it work. Yeah.
But, it does it, you know, we got one of the first new American stone mills. Andrew has done such a beautiful job, and it's so cool to see how big he's gotten.
Yeah.
And, or just even like how skilled he is compared to, like, my mill is great and it works great and it's been running great for, you know, 8 years or so. But, this is the ones now are works of art, you know, like they're gorgeous. And I set one up for, Paul at, Slow Rise when he got his, and, have gone up and, helped him put it together and then helped him sharpen the stones a few times. And, you know, it's perfect. they're so well put together. And the best part is that he uses everything like off the shelf domestic parts that you can get. You could take it to a machine shop and they could replicate it, you know, other than the stones, like all the things that you need, you can get. And it's versus like the Hauslers where everything's Hauslers are what's the other Osterroller? Everything's metric. Everything's wooden. Everything, you know, it's, you know, and, you know, I'm learning to work with wood a little bit, and you know how much it moves with time, with temperature and humidity. And like, they don't do well in a bakery, you know, this, his thing being out of like solid, heavy steel, all replaceable, everything greaseable. And it just produces a beautiful flour.
Yeah. Where are you getting the grain from?
So we have been, initially we started with, what are they called up in Armstrong? What am I doing? My brain's blanking here. I'm going to come back to it, but they're an organic supplier up in Armstrong, the farmers cooperative up there.
Okay.
And so a lot of BC grain, a lot of Saskatchewan grain that they bring in. And then we actually get a lot from Manchosen and Saanich right now.
That's what I was curious about. Yeah. So
we've been, just worked out like Tom Henry grows quite a bit of wheat in Manchosen and has been very successful with that. And, I think a lot of these guys had a big, capacity that they were doing for, Portofino before it got sold, but when the Mulrooney's kind of holding company that bought it, the I think it was Brian Mulrooney's son owns part of this holding company that bought the thing.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when they did that, they cut off all their local grain
That
they were doing. Yeah. And so they had a surplus and good production. So we've been using that as our primary wheat. And that kind of coincided with, why am I blanking? I know this name very well, but the folks up in Armstrong were having some trouble at the beginning of COVID with shipping, getting stuff to the island.
And so here,
why are we, like, Tom showed up with his tractor
and
unloaded, you know, just dropped a couple totes. this makes,
I got the hint.
This makes way more sense. And, and it's been making beautiful bread.
Yeah.
I think
that's awesome.
When I first started, I was using more of it, but they were not having as much fun growing it, I don't think.
they were focusing. I remember at one point he was focusing more on growing barley for pigs and beer and whatnot. But I think with that, they kind of got a thing going with Portofino, and we got the benefit of
getting
a bit more. And
nice.
So yeah, we've been using that for a couple of years, and we get some from Michozen and some from Saanich, depending on when we can get it.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. That's what I was really curious about, because I don't really know what they're growing around here.
Yeah, that's all our whole wheat and all our whole wheat bread and all the whole wheat we use, and all the, we have a sifted wheat that we use as well.
Yeah.
And
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so cool.
Does nice stuff.
Yeah. No, I've used some, like I said there, I get some once in a while in small packages, and then when I get back baking more at home, I'm gonna order up a bigger bag. I'll come see you.
Yeah.
but I've been doing like the little 1 kilo, 2 kilo things.
Yeah.
That's fun. But I guess sort of where are you at these days? Sort of looking forward with you and your family and the bakery. Like where do you kind of see things going?
Well, we've been doing a lot of reinvestment in the space. Yeah. We got really lucky, and it feels really lucky for us, and we got some new landlords at the business. Okay. and they've been putting a lot of investment in this building. This building's 110 years old.
Yeah.
It's built as a quadrilateral, so there's no right angle in the building.
Oh, okay.
in the outside pattern, at least, you know, it's a wacky,
yeah,
a wacky shape, and a parallelogram,
yeah,
quadrilateral on the
yeah, no, I got
wrong word. And for the first like 10 years of us having it, or 9 years of us having it, no one's put a cent into it. And
right.
We've been worried that one day we get knocked down. And we were told that in the middle of COVID, you know, not only dealing with all the fucking shit that was going on, but
yeah,
we were told that they were going to tear the building down. We had 8 months to move.
Oh, God.
And
oh,
I was like, Jesus. Yeah. Not another thing, you know? Yeah. But luckily, some nice folks who own a few other buildings in town bought it, and they've been putting a lot of money into it. They upgraded, you know, this might be shocking for some other bakers, but we ran the whole bakery off a 60 amp electrical service for 8 years, 9 years before they upgraded. They put us, we now have a 200 amp three-phase panel.
Oh, what are you gonna, oh my God.
And it's just like, oh, I don't even have to think about it anymore.
The luxury. Like,
I feel like I suffered for so long for it.
Yeah.
It's worthwhile. You know, when we had the mill in there, we had a mixer, and the mill shared the same plug, you know,
yeah,
everything. I had this lovely older fellow, retired electrician, who would do things that we were not, you know, wouldn't necessarily pass approval.
Yeah.
It was never dangerous, but
would work in theory.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
As long as you didn't turn everything on at the same time.
Yeah.
Which we were careful not to do, you know, and it's an old building, and we wouldn't have been able to do anything in it, yeah, with that, you know? But that has, you know, you've seen it down there. There's we got a lot of fridges going.
Yeah.
We got a good cheater. We got a couple mixers. And the wood fired oven was what got us through that, you know?
Yeah.
For the future, it's been really nice we've just done a lot of reinvestment in the business, and just really fixed a lot of things that, you know, I've been looking at for 10 years going, fuck, I just got to fix that. But, you know, it's either going to take too much of this or do that. And it's just, I'm done with all of those things, you know, yeah, those little, they're just scratching, yep, in the back of your brain. You're like, oh, I fucking hate that thing. And I'm just getting them out now and really working on fine tuning this space, because it's after 10 years and all the changes of life and things, it's,
sure,
they build up. Right.
Yeah.
And, we had a really, like, we're pretty busy through most of COVID, and,
right,
and now we're kind of getting back into a flow where, like, oh, there might be a slow week from time to time.
Right. Yeah.
For 3 years, it was just full on.
Yeah.
Every day was busy.
Yeah.
You couldn't stop.
Yeah.
And, you know, so just kind of looking ahead, I think, towards expecting a bit of a slowdown to be happening, you know, just business-wise,
yeah,
and just preparing for that.
Yeah.
And you know, we opened during a recession, so I think if there is one, we'll be fine.
Right.
And then just thinking about, you know, like I said a little earlier, like, now would have been a normal time for me to start a business in my life.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling like, oh yeah, I could probably have done what I did, you know, 10 years ago. And
yeah,
so I'm just thinking about, you know, other little things. We have a great pizza program that we have a ton of success with. You know, we have lineups sometimes that wrap around the corner and, you know, from the place and halfway down the next block some days. And it's like, it's really humbling to have that experience. Yeah. And we have a lot of skilled people, but we also have a really nice lifestyle.
Yes.
And so we don't really want to do anything that jeopardizes that lifestyle.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Like when I saw the three of you at Jones's there last week, and it's Sunday and you're off to a hockey game and stuff. Yeah. I like that. And I actually saw you last summer out at Sea Chest. But I wasn't 100% sure it was you. And then when I saw you again, I saw, oh, no, that was you.
Yeah.
But, yeah. You know, and just where the boat is must be. Eh?
Yeah. That's where I keep my boat out there. And,
yeah.
And that's,
we just go for the ice cream.
Yeah. my friend Moette makes really delicious ice cream out there, and they're very kind. That family has sort of adopted me out there to come let me work on my boat there. And,
nice.
And, yeah. So,
but I guess the point being, like, and I've always thought that about you is like, you recognize, like, well, we live in paradise out here.
Yeah.
You may as well partake of some of it, right?
It's not worth, you know, missing your life work.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of other work that is non-monetary that you got to do to have a rich life, you know? Yeah. And it can't all just be about business and my mom always talked about how I can close. Oh, there's a horn going.
Yeah, no, that's okay.
I'm gonna close the door.
Yeah.
My mom always talked about my opa never stopping.
Yeah.
And you know, my dad was also a workaholic and never stopped. You know, he worked hard and we played hard growing up, but still, there wasn't a lot of time.
Yeah.
Off. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, I think that's something I've tried to consider. You know, I worked so hard when I first opened this place. Like I remember the weekends when I was still doing the market, I worked 60 hours straight with like 2-3 hour naps.
Yep.
You know, straight through from, you know, waking up on Friday morning at 5 a.m. and I wouldn't really lay down to sleep properly until Sunday at 5:30, you know, in the evening.
Yeah.
And having done 2 or 3 markets that weekend, and it was just like, stuff that's not even possible for me now. You know? The only reason I had success is because I was a child and had an insane amount of energy at that time. But and I worked myself to the point where I had, you know, bursitis in a hip, and I had I was just not as healthy as I should be. And when my son was young, I you know, was starting to think, I was like, oh God, am I gonna be able to keep up with this kid as he grows up and do this? We want to do something, but not at the behest of losing the lifestyle we have or sacrificing the love, like the business we have now. I feel it's really kind of a special spot, you know, and does unique things and does them in a way that, you know, the wood-fired oven, rebuilding the wood-fired oven was such a powerful experience because it feels like that's not being done everywhere, you know?
Well, and it's like a recommitment to the neighborhood, right? Because like these things are not portable, so
It's not going anywhere.
It's like we're doubling down on Craig Flower and the folks here, and that's all. Like that's awesome. Like that's a story that can resonate here. I don't know. I'm a romantic, but I just think it's moves like that that give neighborhoods like this hope, right? Like this is going to be good.
Yeah, and I think it's a tie. You know, it ties into. You see, you know, people putting money into this building and gets that resolve. The people, all the old houses around here, a lot of them are being restored and they're just mowed down. You know, I've been offered several times to open in this spot or that spot in Langford, which would be closer to my house. And it's like, Langford's changing and there will be some nice things about it. But it's changing so fast that you can't figure out where to go. Like you could open one place, it could be great for 2 years and then they could just knock down everything around you.
Yeah.
Start again.
Yeah,
you know, it's
it's
in this state of flux, and it's nice to see people putting the energy into the old buildings here and the character and of the neighborhood. You know, it was always a working class neighborhood and it still hasn't become too bougie.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Yeah. For sure. Well, yeah. I think, you were talking about how you were so young when you started this the first time, and you know what, you have an opportunity now to say, well, all right, knowing what I know now, if I had to do it all over again, how would I do it? And then you can make some decisions based on that. But there's nothing to like nothing to replace the experiences you've had and the experience you had.
Yeah,
you
know? No,
like, that's huge.
There, I would not have learned as much as I've learned doing anything else, probably. And yeah, it's definitely, you know, there's a lot of lessons on just taking care of yourself. And, and I think that's, you guys were having that, you had that panel at the thing and a lot of people talking about their business models and all that. And I think that was one of the things I didn't get a chance to say, but just being able to take care of yourself, I was not able to, you know, I was just all I had, I was so young that work was just everything. I didn't have a routine or a life or things to take care of myself yet. And,
well, that's what Josh was talking about too. When I talked with him, was like, you know, after that first spike of adrenaline, he's realized, okay, if I'm going to do this for the long term, what's my routine, right?
Yeah.
So he's really focused on taking care of himself. Yeah, for sure.
And I think, you know, going in the future, the one thing I'd like to see more, and I thought about this a lot, with, folks, you know, when I was first opening is how, you know, how great a little thing the bakery is on its own and how special of a thing it was to create it. And if I can't necessarily go and open more because I'm too busy tending my own kind of field here, helping other people do that. You know, I have a good friend who helped us do the masonry work on the oven. He was sitting there going, hey, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out some other income and what career stuff, which I do. And I'm encouraging, you know, we're going to build an oven for him up at his place in the Highlands.
Yeah.
And so he can start doing markets. And I think helping other folks and, do similar projects and doing projects that are very grassroots, that are very much not about like I'm starting a corporation or I'm starting this big thing that's gonna you know fall
down over the Eastern Seaboard or
just to go down the old path that we don't like, but like to really put the power back in people's hands to be making their own food.
Well,
and
there you go.
And you know, like Brendan's got a young family, two boys, and his partner, she doesn't want to go back to work, you know, full time with the kids right now. And it's just like, well, yeah, you can bake bread at home, you know, like get that going and sell it at the farmer's market and that'll be great. So I want to see more of that. Brendan spent some time with us, you know, doing the demolishing the oven. He'd been working as a mason for a bit. And then he went with Alex Chernov, who was the mason who came out, very talented folks and, known in the bakery oven world. He came out and did the work on the oven. Brendan apprenticed with him. And then Brendan just came back from being with him out in Ontario, working on a masonry heater.
Oh, nice.
So we're going to have a buddy out here who can build ovens and get things done. And so not only to help him do it and get more experience myself, but to be able to work on projects with him. Because I think, you know, it's really great how big baking has blown up with the advent of, you know, how huge it is on Instagram and everyone now knows the word sourdough and what it means and all this great shit. And but it seems like the wood-fired oven thing is being forgotten a little bit. And it's, you know, there's a lot of places where it doesn't make sense, but it's really cool. And it's, you know, as much as there might be some bad rap around wood burning, they burn really cleanly and they're really efficient.
And once they get hot, like an oven like yours, like it doesn't take much to keep it going.
No, we burn like a wheelbarrow of wood a night, like what you would in a day in a home wood stove, you know, and it burns hotter and cleaner than home wood stoves. And so, it's for some people, it's the only option. You don't have the power, you don't have gas, and you're going to run propane, which doesn't get as hot. And fossil fuels or dam a river or you know, have a like in some places if you got a wood lot or this or that. And so we'd like to go build more ovens and see that happen again, because I think that's one of the reasons it's not happening is that there's not a lot of people building ovens.
Sure.
Alex, who came out to build ours, he's actually kind of retiring from that, and I'm going out in a week to help him open a bagel shop in Mont-Tremblant.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
So me and Paul.
That's right. Yeah.
From Slow Rise or formerly of Slow Rise, and my partner Hannah, we're all flying out east on actually a week today.
Oh, man. That sounds like so much fun.
Yeah. So we're going to do a bakery tour in Montreal, and then we're going to go see Boulangerie Merci La Vie up in a little north of Montreal there. I don't know if you...
No, well, I don't.
The Albert there and his lady, they do really cool stuff.
Oh, man.
Yeah, Albert and Joanne. Oh.
Well, I'll come visit when you get back then, because I need a full debrief.
Oh, I'm really stoked. It's always fun going out there. And every time I've been out to Montreal and Quebec, I go in the summer. And because it's so humid, I'm never hungry, you know, but there's so much, and I eat, of course, because it's so good, but like, it's so hard. And so now it's going to be cold, and I'm like, keep myself healthy by going kickboxing all the time. So I'm going kickboxing every day to like get myself, kind of starved and beaten up so that when I get there, I can just eat.
Yeah. There you
and
go.
Enjoy. And,
but that's I think that's how you're going to get your 200 bakeries out around here, though.
Yeah.
is making sure the skills remain or get replenished, like the masonry skills and stuff, and then help mentor folks, get them going. You know?
And I think the thing about a wood-fired oven too that it really affects on a community level is, you know, we could have spent, and not knocking, you know, a lot of folks around have bought these Bassanina ovens,
right,
the wood-fired one, and they're a great oven. I understand why people buy them, but all that money that they spent on them went to Italy.
Yeah.
Didn't stay here.
Yeah.
You know, some, there were 60, 70 grand for some of those things. And, you know, we spent, you know, probably about 20 doing the rebuild on our oven, and all that stayed right here.
Yeah.
And you know, to build a wood fired oven is it's an investment in that space for a long time, but it also invests in people who are in your community, as opposed to the money going to EM in Vancouver and then the most of it going out of the country.
Yeah.
So
right on.
That's kind of it's more bringing the power back to you and having a connection.
Yeah. Well, and the way that you even set up this rebuild of the oven, that's like, okay, I'm going to learn some skills. Worked out, you've got an apprentice. Now you get to go share some skills. Like, that's, I don't know. That's how it should be.
Yeah.
You know, a lot more trading.
Yeah. It was really nice when Alex came out. You know, I wasn't sure that he would, how he would take to having a helper with Brendan being there and just myself. And, you know, him and Brendan got on great. And there was this transfer of knowledge that was so lovely to see, and just reminded me how important that is to share your knowledge. And I think that was actually the thing about Leaders Eat Last book, where he talks about in the 12-step program, the part of recovery from anything, so maybe baking addiction, is helping someone else with their baking addiction, you know?
Yeah.
It's step number 12. It's the end. You have to pass it on, you know?
Yeah.
But no, it's, I think that's really important. Like, you're not truly going to feel fulfilled in your work if you're not teaching at the same time, you know, and not lifting each other up. So, you know,
cool. Right on. Well, thanks for doing this. This has been, it's been good seeing you again. Good talking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right on.
Great.
That was so much fun. I really like Byron, and I hadn't seen him in ages. You know, when we had Orange Boot Bakery, we would come out to Victoria, Cindy and I, in January for a bit of a break, like just after Christmas. And I'd walk over and go to Byron's place at least once, sometimes twice. Once I even spent the night, I went there at midnight and we worked beside him in that. And it was good. And then we kind of lost touch, you know, for quite a while. And even when I moved back here, I didn't go over and see him for the longest time. I'm very glad we reconnected. He's a very nice guy, very thoughtful fella, as you can tell. And I think he does good things, and his heart's in the right place. So I was so glad that we got to talk and got to share this talk with you. So I hope you enjoyed it. I hope that, you know, even if you are going to open up, what's the complete opposite of Byron's Bakery? It would be, I guess, a high-end pastry place in a big urban center with all the best shiny equipment and a staff of 30. Maybe that's the opposite. Maybe that's the opposite in the business model, but I know for the folks that listen to this show, that's not the opposite in terms of the heart. And so it doesn't really matter what you're baking, how you're making it, and where your bakery is and that kind of thing. I think folks that listen to this show, their heart's in the right place, and they're trying to feed the people in their neighborhoods. And Byron's doing exactly that. And he's carving out a life for himself and for his family and for his bakers to bring a little bit of joy to the folks in the neighborhood where he lives and works. So, you know, I think that's a good place if you're a longevity enthusiast. What are you going to do with that longevity? Hey, I think Byron's doing a good thing with his longevity. So, all right,
That's it for this week. We'll be back soon with another show, still lining up some new calls and folks to talk to. So I think we're probably on a fortnightly schedule for the next while, till we get a few more chats in the bank, but they are getting scheduled and we're excited to bring some new shows for you. Until we get together again, whether on the podcast or over at bakersforbakers.org, have fun, work hard, make the good stuff, enjoy the people where you live. Happy baking. Bye-bye.